There are some people who just love chewing on the meat, feeling the juice and the blood. And, this is the flesh of an animal. I enjoy eating that so much. Are such people any better than the animals that they eat? Animals also enjoy eating meat. They enjoy the feeling of dominating. They catch an animal, kill it, and eat it. That feeling, now I've dominated. Now I'm enjoying the blood of that animal. Even if we talk in terms of human character, human civilization, there are, at least there used to be, considerations of high class, low class, moral, ethical. So, someone who is high class, or what should we say, a good person, means they don't want to do harm to others, they have consideration for others. They don't want to hurt others unnecessarily. What we have all over the world is a whole culture of organized meat consumption. So it's symptomatic of a civilization that is low class, unfeeling, enjoying pleasures at a level that gross animals enjoy pleasure. I myself, and of course many others, don't eat meat. I was raised in a culture of meat eating, but at a certain point I decided enough is enough. I'm not going to do this anymore just because everyone around me is doing it. In those days, in the early 1970s, it wasn't very common to be a vegetarian. It was still considered something quite abnormal and maybe wrong by most people. Since the 1970s, vegetarianism and now veganism has expanded exponentially, especially in the Western countries. Good. But still, the great majority of people who consider themselves civilized, good, decent people, didn't rise above the level of enjoying the flavor of flesh and blood of other living beings. We might have thought that with higher education, universal education, which people are taught, supposed to be taught, how to come to a higher platform of consideration, of laws and ethics, we might have thought that civilized man would have considered, well, it's not proper to give pain unnecessarily to other living beings just for the satisfaction of the tongue, because we don't need physically, biologically, we don't need to eat meat. So why should we unnecessarily give pain to others? It's not necessary to be a carnivore or an omnivore. These are, of course, terms used for animals. There's also the term herbivore. And humans can be considered as one kind of animals. We are all animals, in one sense, biologically considered. There was a book published in 1967. I remember reading it as a kid. It was quite a, it was a popular book at the time, nonfiction. It was called The Naked Ape by Dr. Desmond Morris, in which Dr. Morris analyzed human beings from the perspective of a zoologist. Just like you might examine any other animal. What are the breeding habits? of, for instance, lions, breeding habits, sexual behavior, social behavior. Of course, there are different ways to analyze zoologically, but you could say the sociology, what we would call sociology, analyzed from a biological perspective. Social habits, defensive mechanisms, instincts, and so on. That humans have so much in common with animals is also understood or presumed in the fact that experiments are conducted on animals. Now, there are experiments for instance, some drug. What is the physical effect on the body when new drugs are being tested? First, they're tested on animals. Not just drugs, things like floor polish. First, it'll be put in the eyes of laboratory rats or whatever to see what kind of reaction they have. The idea is that, well, if it's a very severe physical reaction, then we could maybe expect that in humans also. So laboratory animals are used for testing, but not just for various chemicals and drugs, but also this psychology of animals is examined and mapped onto that of humans. A very well-known early such experiment was that of Pavlov's dogs. Dr. Pavlov made an experiment in which he would ring a bell loudly within earshot of dogs each time just before he fed them. And then he noticed, or he was expecting such a result, that the dogs start to salivate as soon as they hear the bell. Although the bell itself has got nothing to do with eating per se, but because they're used to hearing a bell ring before they're fed, their eating process begins with expectation of food, salivation. So this shows a level of intelligence or psychological mechanisms within dogs that they associate as a repeated stimulus. They can associate it with something else which is not directly related. Normally, a dog would start to salivate when you put the food in front of him, or maybe when it sees the food and understands it's to be given to him. So this is mapped onto humans also, that certain signs, certain stimuli, although they're not directly related to a specific phenomenon, it can be understood that we also do that. Similar kind of thing. You ring a bell in the school yard where the kids are playing, and they know it's a sign for them all to rush in. Or another bell at the end of the day, and they all of a sudden, the feeling of relief comes over them, and they all start talking very loudly. So Pavlov's dogs or any other animal experiments, psychological experiments, they may not 100% map onto human behavior, but often enough, at least to give some indication or pattern that we can map onto human behavior and make some preliminary conclusions or at least hypotheses, even without all this experimentation, we can understand that, for instance, a dog left alone, locked up all day, becomes lonely. Therefore, in some states in America, it is illegal to own a dog unless you can give the dog company. If you can't be at home, if no one's at home for the dog, then the dog has to be put in a place with other dogs or somewhere where you can have some company. As humans, we can understand to some extent the various sounds that horses and cats and dogs make. They make varied kinds of sounds. We can understand a sound of distress or pleasure. So we understand that animals can be happy and understand that they can be sad. We can understand to some extent what they are expressing. Last time I was in Vadodara in Gujarat, I was staying in an apartment just close to the temple. When I came out of the apartment, there was a stray cat there. Actually, pretty much all the cats in India are stray, looking very mangy and thin, and looked at me very intently. Meow, meow, meow. I could understand. I don't know cat language, but I could understand. It was asking for some food. It was importuning me to give some food. I understood that. And then I asked the devotees, bring some milk. And the cat took all the milk that we gave. It was hungry. So we can understand that animals have feelings, which means that if we think we're being very moral, then we shouldn't unnecessarily cause distress to other humans. But what about not causing distress to animals also? We are all animals. We may be very proud of our human civilization, building big buildings. Bees and ants also do their engineering and make superb, for their needs, the kind of construction they make is superb. In terms of organization and cooperation, the ants and the bees in many ways outdo us. So we can see that we are animals, and in some ways we're behind the animals also. A lot of what goes on in human civilization is simply indulging in animalistic tendencies. For instance, in much of today's world, people rely on having their own transportation to move around and do the things they need to do. Here in India, still the most common means of transportation is a motorbike or scooter, or if you're lower down on the income level, a moped. Increasingly, people have cars. In countries like Britain and USA, people generally have cars, and for getting around, they need a car, and maybe for fun, they have a motorbike. You can get a relatively cheap car, or you can buy a very expensive car, if you have the money. Similarly, you can live in a house, small house, but people who have lots of money, they tend to live in houses which are much bigger than they actually need. So the car, the means of transport, and the house, the place of residence, they're not simply to fulfill our basic needs. They're not simply utilitarian. but they're to advertise one's prestigious position, to drive a Mercedes-Benz car or Rolls-Royce, especially a Rolls-Royce, is more prestigious than driving a simple Volkswagen. It's to show, I'm better than you. Just like the animals may, the dogs may snarl and show their teeth, show their hackles, trying to show I'm better than you, I'm more powerful than you. Even when one country invades another country, it's territory, my territorial rights, just like animals like cats and dogs have their sense of territory. If another dog comes into what one dog considers to be his own territory, that dog will bark at the intruder. So similarly, this sense of territory, this land, you think it's your land, but we want to make it our land. We want to dominate over you. We think that it's wrong for one country to invade another country, that each country should have its own territory. And for that reason, we have passports and visas, and persons from certain countries are allowed very easily in another country. From other countries, they're not allowed. You need permission to enter the territory. It's the same kind of mentality as the territorialism of animals. More sophisticated. This is my land. Snarling and fighting of dogs and humans more civilized have wars. There's so much propaganda in the Western world. China and Russia are bad, and it's just presumed we are good. And no doubt in Russia and China, the propaganda's run the other way. That over there in the West, they're the baddies, we are the goodies. Yeah. Russia and China, we highlight everything they do wrong, even if it's not wrong. They do wrong things. We cover up or downplay or deny our own atrocities. We try to silence or torture those who, within our own ranks, who try to point that out, that we ourselves are not so clean and good as we would like to show ourselves to be. For instance, the leader of a very powerful country in the world at the present time, who has sent the forces of his country into a neighboring country, is almost universally reviled as being someone extremely bad. But we don't see any such revulsion for the leaders of our own countries who are also overseeing. It's not seen by the public, but overseeing all kinds of horrible things are done. Any powerful country, the leader of any powerful country is leading all kinds of horrible covert activities. They try not to show it in many cases, but all kinds of things. Torture, kidnapping, and silencing political enemies, either by propaganda or by arresting them or keeping them in prison on flimsy charges, assassinating them. It's the so-called civilized countries, that those who claim to be civilized, they do it. We don't see that. It's surprising how I see in the Western world how even very intelligent and seemingly well-informed, worldly wise people, they just parrot the same propaganda that everyone buys into. Those are the baddies, we are the goodies. When we torture people, we do it because we're civilized. It's unfortunate, but necessary. Well, we don't really torture people. That's only what those barbarians do, right? They do it all the time. We do it. Sometimes we have to do... Better not talk about it. The paragon of British civilization is considered to be Sir Winston Churchill, who in a vote just a short time ago, maybe 2-3 years ago, was considered the greatest Englishman in history. He was instrumental in galvanizing the British people to resist the Nazis, and eventually the Nazis were overcome. Of course, it wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for the intervention of the Americans and the Soviets. Britain likes to take more credit than it's due in this matter. And it was considered a major victory for civilization to stop the Nazis, because later, as it became found out, how the Nazis had systematically killed millions of people. Some people deny it, but seems to be pretty good evidence for it. Millions of people, including especially Jews and then gypsies and homosexuals and physically and mentally disabled people, political rivals, and so on. What was not brought to the fore, what people generally didn't know, and maybe they know more recently, people know, but it just wasn't publicized, how Churchill, by his deliberate policies, had killed literally millions of people by orchestrating an artificial famine in India, confiscating all the grains. And at the end of World War II, the maybe tens of thousands of fleeing refugees in the city of East Germany, Eastern Germany, Dresden, was firebombed by the RAF, the British Air Force, unnecessary, for no military purpose whatsoever. Just literally thousands of people were burned to death by Winston Churchill's order, Bomber Harris. But we like to think, oh, yes, he's our Churchill, very good. He's our man. And they are very bad. What's the point I'm making here? This might sound like I'm talking like some kind of political talk or something, but the underlying point I'm trying to make is that we have animalistic propensities, one of which is organizing ourselves into groups and making enmity with other groups. Politics especially is sophisticated animalism, trying to dominate over others, domination, power, inducing fear, us versus them, and then you get in power and then you exploit. That's governmental politics, there's office politics, politics within a family. It's all the animalistic propensity. There are disagreements over so many things. It seems like humans can't live together without disagreeing and become very nasty in many cases against each other. Even if the cause is a worthy cause, increasingly we see in the present time, or even if the issue is a complex issue, which requires sober discussion, there's not much sober discussion. It's mostly ad hominem attacks. One party against the other. What we talk about when we say civilization is of one group of people who are effective in dominating everything around them, in dominating over other humans, exploiting natural resources, those who have superior intelligence, organizational abilities, technical and especially military power. They take control, and that's called civilization. They dominate. And in the present day, there's soft power also by propaganda, via TV and internet. Education, what's called education, is indoctrination. Western civilization took its cue from a misinterpretation of the Bible that God gave man dominion over all the animals. So that was taken to mean that dominion over means you should look after them and protect them, but it was taken to mean that we exploit them, we eat them, and then we find within the Gospel of St. John, Jesus saying, I am the way, the truth, and the light. No one comes to the Lord but through me. And that was taken as a cue for Christian domineering. If you're not a Christian, then anyway you're going to go to hell, so we might as well make hell for you in advance, or kill you, send you there. It's an exclusivist outlook. Present civilization. At the present time, the Western world is dominating. It's on the way down, that's clear, but it considers itself the greatest civilization ever. But like all previous civilizations that are known, it's animalistic. We are cunning animals. The more powerful you come, the more powerful you are, the more arrogant you become, and in many ways more stupid, because power clouds one's intelligence, and one starts to think you can get away with doing whatever you like, and you can treat people in whatever way you like, but you don't see, jumping ahead. I have a spiritual message to give. I'm not just talking some ethical talks here. But there are laws in the universe. For every action, there is a reaction. There are karmic reactions. We don't see that. There is the laws of God beyond all this. So we see that generally, where people are very civilized, whatever you want to call it, civilized, they have a system of education. So we see people are very intelligent. But we see people are very intelligent, but their intelligence is subordinate to their animalistic propensities. For instance, in the matter of sex. Sex is required for procreation. But even supposedly intelligent people think it's normal, desirable to have sex for pleasure. That's animalistic. We say, yeah, well, sex is for pleasure. It gives pleasure. But just look, it's on the level of the animals. They also get pleasure. When the dog is having sex, or the chimpanzee is having sex, they're having the same kind of pleasure as you. So how are you so much better than an animal for all your intelligence? It's normal that what is considered a good, moral, civilized person, but yet he engages in abominable activities like illicit sex, meat-eating, intoxication, gambling, directly or indirectly exploitation of others. This civilization, so-called, is all based on exploitation. Even all this technical equipment, which we're using right now, is based on exploitation of the Earth's resources. Coffee, chocolate, tea, that's based on exploitation of cheap or bonded labor or child labor in some cases. Eating meat is based on torture of animals in most cases nowadays, not to speak of killing them. It's animalistic. Among animals, there's no ethics, there's no morality. Might is right is the law of the jungle. The animal kingdom is cruel. A cat kills a bird. Okay, so the cat's going to eat the bird. But the cat never thinks, oh, the bird is suffering. Or to speak of the mate of the bird who isn't killed. I've seen once in Gujarat, I was out walking early morning, I saw a rabbit running terrified, wild rabbit, of course, and way, way behind, there's a pack of dogs running after the rabbit. Then I was out chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, in the countryside in Gujarat. So I walked some distance and I came back. When I came back, I saw the rabbit was dead. So the dogs had chased that rabbit and killed it, not for food, just for fun. Animalistic. They're animals. What can you expect? You see some beautiful birds. The swallow flies very gracefully. But what's it doing? We don't see, but it's catching so many swallows, swifts. They catch so many insects as they're flying. And kill. They're in that body. That's what they do. Humans should rise to a higher level. They should rise above this coarseness. Animals, they'll go to great lengths to protect their own types, especially the mother of a group of puppies will protect. For instance, they'll protect the puppies. They'll go to great lengths to protect their own in their own group. Generally speaking, animals don't think of animals in any other group. It's our group, and we look after our own. There may be some animals. We hear of dolphins sometimes protecting humans, dogs. Kept for protection, to protect the master who is a human animal against other human animals. Dogs are kept for protection because they will put themselves at risk to protect their master. And they sometimes kill others also. It's fairly common, probably every day somewhere in the world, a dog kills a human. Dogs are also seen to mourn if their master dies. So there is a sense among some animals of feeling for animals outside their own group or putting themselves out for others. It's not developed in a philosophical way, like the concept of morality. Animals can't formulate such ideas. However, among humans, however much we may talk of humanitarianism, what's really going on in the world is might makes right. Hitler put forward his theory, we're Germans, we're better than you, we need more land. We're going to take your land. He was open and blunt about it. But nowadays, invasions are often conducted under humanitarian. We have to help these people. They need democracy, and we need to steal their oil. We don't say that. It's hypocritical. The British Empire was justified in the name of civilizing others, the massive looting and exploitation, but in a very sophisticated way. And after all, it's our right, it's our duty to go into other countries and subjugate their political systems and exploit their resources because we're civilized and we are civilizing them. They did develop the countries also, just like in India, they built, the British built railroads and bridges. But the point of making that infrastructure was to facilitate the Britishers' exploitation of the resources of India, to extract the wealth from India. It wasn't done altruistically. Might makes right is the law of the jungle. And although we may pride ourselves in being more advanced and having higher principles, that's what's actually going on. That's what works in the world. Another point, just underlining the point that we are animalistic. And gradually, I'll come to the spiritual message. You may be wondering why I'm talking so much like this. There is a spiritual message, which means to go beyond our, to go above our animalistic propensities. So another point is that biologically, we can understand that racism has no basis. It's the same kind of blood in black bodies or white bodies or yellow bodies or whatever. But despite propaganda to stop racism, it just goes on and on. And it's not just white versus blacks, but there's also casteism, and then there's English don't like the Irish, and it goes on. People from the southern states of America, they tend to be skeptical of Yankees, people from the north, and it just goes on and on and on. It's tribal consciousness. It's something biological. Is it because we're just animals? We just don't like people who are not the same type as us, who are not in the same group as us. People in my tribe are good. People in your tribe are not good, unless we make some kind of alliance, which is can be broken at any time. But I identify with my tribe, or my country, or my race, and others who are not part of my group, we don't trust them, we don't believe them, we don't listen to them. Their voices don't get to be heard. The events unfolding in Ukraine at the present time have excited much outrage in the Western world, but not nearly so much as similar fighting and destruction, which has been going on for years in Yemen. For instance, what to speak of the sufferings of people in Afghanistan, thanks to the presence of Western troops who thought they were doing a good job for Afghanistan, by going in there and killing tens of thousands of people. Ukrainians, we feel so much empathy for them. And yeah, we should do. It's not a very pleasant situation that their country's been put into by any means. But we don't find the same, I'm talking about from the Western perspective now, we don't find anywhere near the same level of empathy for people in Yemen, and what to speak of places in Africa which are under constant fighting and war. We hardly even hear about it. We don't seem to care about it much. Interestingly, here in India, where it's India, it's not the West, the same level of outrage that is spewing against the Russians for their actions in Ukraine, it's not felt by the people here. Maybe because they have different territorial priorities. Indians tend to distrust British intentions. They have a history of camaraderie with the Russians. Again, I'm not trying to make any political point. I'm just saying how we line up. It's like a tribal consciousness based on the concept of I, me, and mine. Another example, just a few years ago, the junior pilot of a Eurowings flight, Eurowings, a subsidiary of Lufthansa, the German airline, the junior pilot of a Eurowings flight deliberately crashed a full plane, killing all the people on board, including himself, of course. Recently, it seems a similar thing happened in China, but it doesn't get the same level of press coverage. Right now, as I'm speaking, there's a massive upsurge of COVID in China, according to the news, and literally tens of thousands of people are dying. But it doesn't get the same level of publicity as if it were happening in America. Why is that? When the Twin Towers were toppled, 9/11, September the 11th, 2001, I believe it was, there was a huge outpouring of grief and outrage in the Western world, especially the English-speaking world. But as was pointed out by many people in countries which consider themselves to be victims of Western aggression, why is there so much outcry when people in America are killed and not when people in our country are killed, often by Americans? What's going on in the name of civilization? I'll get back to that in the next talk. Really, I'm just analyzing the human condition, how it's animalistic. But the point we have to get to is how to go beyond animalism and come to a true spiritual position. I plan to get through to that in the next talk. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nithaya chunakang padayone patya kritvaja kaku shatam etad aham bravimi he sadhava sakala eve vihaya durad gauranga chanda charane kuruta anuragaha parivadatu jano yatha tata va nanu mukaro navayang vicharyamaha hari rasamadira madati mata bhuvi vilutama nartama nirvishama Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.